This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I am not coming in tomorrow. I am writing because I am behind. Oh, I am behind. I've had several little things pop up this week, and was hoping to be a major portion through of my rewrites on Grumpy Old Prophets Parts 2 and 3, which is the second book, and I started doing some of the read-through on it, and it was all going fine. It's going just fine. It's just, you know, I had something Tuesday night, and then Wednesday night's out, and then I've got something tonight, and so I know I'm not going to get done all I'd like to get done tonight, but I need to get caught up tomorrow, so I'm planning on holing up tomorrow and, you know, doing the thing, seeing if I can't get these rewrites done. I have one section that I need to stretch a little bit. It's the death of John the Baptist, and it's somewhat intense, but it's quick, and it kind of surprised my daughter when she read it. She said, oh, it was over. I said, yeah, I kind of intentionally made it quick. But now that I've had a chance to get the rest of the books done and I'm going back for this second pass through before we put them into production, not so sure about how quick that is. I think maybe as I read it, I'm going to want to stretch it. I think there can be a little more dramatic, possibly even touch the moment a little bit, which is always a little challenge to get to that. Because it's balancing, and it usually takes me a little while to find the balance and find the point. And so I'm a little nervous about stretching out that scene and actually trying to touch the moment there, simply because it requires some focus. But anyways, so that's going fine. Everything is fine. It's good. I just need to get this under control because it's almost November. And the deadline for the beta readers for acting, which is part five, book four, is November the 17th. And I need to start reminding them that that's coming up. But I would really like to be ready to start editing Grumpy Old Prophets Part 5 very close to November 17th, and I still have to do Knowing, used to be Loving, Knowing Grumpy Old Prophets Part 4 before I can get to that. So, go. Anyways, okay, so, it turned cold today. I mean, all of a sudden, it turned cold. I was out for a walk this morning, and if I recall correctly, it was 64 or 65 degrees this morning. The wind was blowing, but it was 64 or 65 degrees, and that was this morning at, I don't know, 6:30-ish or so, and it's been a nice day, and I walked out today, and all of a sudden, it was 44 degrees. So, and I just noticed that my phone is really low on battery, so I'm going to just plug it into my little charger here that I have in the car. So anyways, it's cold. I let the car run for a little bit and warmed up, so I've got that, and it's good. What else happened this week? Had some just wonderful times with my friends this week, so that was good. And expect to have breakfast tomorrow with a buddy, and expect to have breakfast on Saturday with the young couple. It's interesting. My buddy that I get together with on Tuesday nights, and the young couple I get together with on Tuesday mornings, and then the young couple I get together with on Saturday mornings, we go to Bob Evans, which is a little breakfast place. And there has been, I've made friends with some of the wait staff there, the servers, but there's one particular server that she's been a little kind of cold and professional, even though she's waited on us a bunch of times and we've chit-chatted a little bit, but she's always been kind of cold, which is fine, you know. She has her own life, so that's cool. Well, the couple I get together with on Saturday mornings, they have two cute little girls, just cute little girls, and mom lets them dress up in their little tutu skirts, you know, and so usually puts them on over their jeans, so they have their little tutu skirts, and sometimes they come in with their tiaras on, and it was fun because, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I think, this particular server was serving me and my buddy on Tuesday morning, and she came over, excuse me, and we were chatting a little bit, and it's, you know, her whole face lit up, and she said, now those, she said, those young little girls that come in with you on Saturday, she said, are those your granddaughters? And I said, no, I said, that is the son of my best friend, and so I've kind of been Uncle Phil to them all their lives. And she said, oh, she said, those little girls are so cute. And that was just enough to break the ice. You know, and so now she smiles when we come in and we joke and we laugh, and it's good. I have a coworker that, whenever we have talked, you know, she's been somewhat reserved, which is fine. And we have chatted several times over the last several months. And just this last time we chatted, you know, she was laughing and we were making jokes. And so it's nice to see that progression in people. It's nice to see people opening up a little bit, realizing that you're trustworthy, that you're safe, that they can share with you and everything will be fine. It's really nice when that progression happens. And you've earned their trust. I mean, I have another waitress at Bob Evans that, you know, whenever I and my buddy walk in and she sees us, she hollers out, "Hi, boys!" We go, "Hi!" So we just have a nice time. Just nice time. It's good to encounter other human beings heart to heart, spirit to spirit. It's good. I actually did not know what I was going to talk about today.
And frankly, I
had a bunch of stuff that was kind of queued up, and I had actually even queued up a couple of articles on Violent Acres, the troll who went by the handle Violent Acres, who was a part of Reddit for a long time, who was the author of several Reddit boards, including Jailbait and Creepshots, where with Jailbait, what they were doing is they were having people upload pictures of underaged girls that were dressed up in sexy outfits. And in fact, the moderators of the board went out of their way to make sure that the pictures were of underaged girls. And if a picture was uploaded where the girl could have been possibly 16 or 17, then they deleted the picture. And Creepshots, apparently, is, you know, when guys are out in public and they're walking behind a woman or something, so then they take a picture of her rear end or take a picture of her cleavage when she's not looking. And this guy had started those boards along with lots of other boards whose names I wouldn't necessarily even repeat. And he's sort of been the self-described creepy old uncle of Reddit, where he has had several years and sort of become a folk hero on Reddit for being this bastion of free speech, I guess you would say, where you can do whatever you want. And several weeks ago, his real identity was actually outed by a journalist who had done enough research and tracked enough things down that figured out who he was and did a post on who he was. And there were subsequent articles on, you know, what is the cause of trolling and why do people troll and have a different personality on the internet than they do in real life, and how do their family members react to it? And there was an article on how that once this guy was outed, he was fired from his job, which, you know, I mean, yeah. And I was studying through all the stuff last night, and it was later because I had gotten home later because I had a really nice chat with a friend, and Wednesday is my fast day, and so by the time I made it home and got all the finances done, which I usually do on Wednesday nights, I was blitzed, and I was reading through this stuff, and I just got to the point where I thought, I'm not even interested in talking about this. Because everyone's like, well, we're not sure how this all happens. And I just felt like saying, it's flesh, okay? It's flesh. It leads to destruction. If you give it a chance, it will want to manifest. If you think you're anonymous, it will have more leverage and convince you that it can manifest. It's flesh, period. Done. We're done. It's flesh. It will not lead to success. No matter how much you want to beat the drum about, well, this is free speech and we should all have free speech. And I'm not against free speech. It's a wonderful country we live in where people can express their opinions. I love that. But it doesn't create an environment of success, period. It's flesh. And so that's that topic. We're done. So having dismissed that topic, I was looking around for some other things to do. I'm sitting at a stoplight, just as a sidebar, and there's a bunch of power lines, and there's a whole congregation of birds sitting on the power lines. A lot of birds, and they're on multiple power lines. It's a little creepy. Anyways, so I was looking for some other things to do, and then I remembered I had actually seen a TED Talk that was moderately interesting. And it was about music and medicine. Well, and specifically, the person who was talking, his name was Robert Gupta. I don't think it's the Robert Gupta. And he was talking about the challenge that he had in life of whether he should pursue music or medicine. But in conjunction with that, he started talking about medicinal uses of music. And that got pretty interesting pretty quickly. And so I'm just going to kind of pick pieces out of what he was talking about and recommend a YouTube video to you all that you might go and watch that's very touching. I watched it this morning. After I looked over his notes, I really wasn't that interested in just talking about his personal struggle to decide between music and medicine, but he mentioned enough things in this talk about music and how music is being employed to assist people that I thought, wow, that is really interesting. And one of the things he started off with was he started talking about Gabrielle Giffords, who you may or may not remember was the Arizona House of Representatives, from Arizona, who was shot in the head and has been on this long, arduous path to recovery. And they showed, and he mentioned this video on YouTube that he had seen. And I thought, wow, I got to go find that. And so I went over to YouTube and typed in Gabrielle Giffords, G-I-F-F-O-R-D-S, singing. And found a couple of things, and I finally found the relevant clip. I guess ABC did a thing on her, and it was part of the ABC story, and it was like part two of part three. Somebody had uploaded this to YouTube, and I was watching it. And it's really very, very touching. And Robert Gupta described this in his TED Talk, and it is very cool. Because one of the bullets that she is recovering from actually entered her left hemisphere of her brain, and it knocked out, I guess, what's called the Broca's area, which is the speech center of her brain. And on this ABC special, they were talking about how that people have described this as like a hurricane going through your speech center and just completely blowing apart your ability to form sentences and get the right words attached to the right thoughts. And it's a long and hard process of recovery. But interestingly enough, they have a new tool for this. And this clip on YouTube kind of shows this new tool. And what you see is Gabrielle Gifford's speech therapist working with her, just trying to get her to say some basic words. And Gabrielle Gifford is trying, and she's trying, and you can see the effort, and she just can't get it done. I mean, this is a woman who's a very intelligent woman who made her living through her speech, you know, a dynamic speaker, and now she just can't get her brain to form these words. And as you can imagine, it's very frustrating. And I can imagine that would be very frustrating. And she's struggling, and she's getting more and more devastated until she just starts breaking down, and she's vocalizing. She's not saying any words. She's just vocalizing and groaning in this high pitch because she's just devastated. And she's sobbing. And after a few moments of that, the speech therapist, for some reason, probably because she had heard of this, tries a different tact. And what the speech therapist starts to do is sing. And she starts singing, "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine." And as she starts singing this, Gabrielle Gifford perks up and starts singing with her, words and all. And by the time you get to the end of the song, she actually finishes up the song singing in harmony with her speech therapist. Because apparently Gabrielle Giffords was also involved in singing and I guess musical theater and that kind of thing when she was growing up. And the speaker of the TED Talks used that to segue into the power of music. Not only the power of music, though, but the newer techniques that are being used with people who have had brain damage, specifically to their left word center, or perhaps have become aphasic where they can't get the words out anymore because of some injury or because of some tumor or something. And there is this technique now that they have called melodic intonation therapy. Because what they found is that music is produced and activates so many places in the brain that music allows you to access all of these other places, and some of those places aren't damaged. And so you can actually pull back your capability to express words through music. And this is like so cool that they found out that people can sing Happy Birthday to You or their favorite song by the Eagles or the Rolling Stones. And they found that in some cases by having like 70 hours of intensive singing lessons, that you could actually use music to rewrite the brains of patients and create what they call a homologous speech center in their right hemispheres and actually compensate for the damage in the left hemisphere. Okay, this is very cool. Very cool. And they found that music can do all this other stuff too. That you can use music to help children with autism. So you can use music to help people who are struggling with stress and anxiety and depression and Parkinson's and all these kind of things. And this guy had decided that instead of going into medicine, that he would pursue a career in music. And is doing very well for himself. But he started talking about different experiences, how he had met this guy who was down on Skid Row, who used to be a great musician, and how, as when he would play with him, that the music would bring him back to the present reality. I'm getting my mail. Woo, it's cold out there. Rolling up my window right now. And this is just a fascinating thing. And then they formed a kind of a little orchestra, I think, with some Skid Row kids, and they would go around and play for people. And he said it was really interesting, he said, because they'd go and they'd play for people. And he said in one concert, I'm trying to see, here it is. He said in one concert that they did, yeah, they started as a little organization of Skid Row musicians called Street Symphony. And they would go around and they'd play in what he called the dark places. They performed for the homeless, mentally ill at shelters, clinics on Skid Row, performing for combat veterans, post-traumatic stress disorder, for the incarcerated, those labeled as clinically insane. He said, after one of our events, I'm backing into my garage. Let me get backed into my garage. We'll talk. He said, after one of their events, at, I think it is Patton. One moment, I'm almost backed into my garage. Okay. At one of their events at the Patton State Hospital in San Bernardino, he said, a woman walked up to us and she had tears streaming down her face. And she had palsy and she was shaking. And she had this gorgeous smile. And she said she had never heard classical music before. She didn't think she was going to like it. She had never heard a violin before, but that hearing the music was like hearing sunshine, and that nobody ever came to visit them, and that for the first time in 6 years, when she heard us play, she stopped shaking without medication. I mean, this is cool. This is so cool. Power of music. You know, when I took over the choir at Praise Assembly after my wife started on her sabbatical, way back in September of 2001, and I took over the choir, I think it was in January of 2002. When it was announced, and you know, somebody started going speech, speech, speech. So I said, and I had sung in this choir for years, so they all knew me. So I stood up and I thought, fine, you want me to make a speech? I'll give you a speech and I will give you homework. And so I stood up, not really knowing what they'd find. But I stood up and I said, I tell you what, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to go back to your Bibles and look up singers. Because we're going to be talking over the next several weeks about what is the reason we have singers in the church. What is the purpose of singers? Why are we here? Why are we doing this? And so they did, and they gathered all kinds of stuff, and we came up with a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, in the Old Testament, the singers in the temple didn't have to pay taxes. Ooh. They were tax exempt, as were all the musicians. And there's all kinds of different scriptures that we had about singers and this singer's this and that singer's that. And then I finally said, look, this is why I think we have singers. I said, because one of the things that music does for us is it can transport us to a different place. Music has this power to help us believe. And that's why they use it on commercials, because it helps us believe what they're saying on the commercial. And that's why they use it as beds underneath movies, because music helps put us in the moment and helps us believe what we are seeing, that it's real. Helps amp up our emotions. And I said, I personally believe God gave us music to help us when we're in the middle of depression, or when we're discouraged, or when we're struggling with our belief, that God gave us music so that we can go to music and through that help kind of break through that and get back in touch with Him. I said, because of that, I said, I recognize that the world recognizes the power of music sometimes more than we do in the church. And so we're just going to take it back. We're going to use it for what it's intended to be used for. And instead of using it as a music bed for a movie where we're trying to sell fiction, or using it as a movie bed for advertising where we're trying to sell products, we're going to use it as a music bed for our worship of Him, to get us focused on Him. And I said, you need to know I'm going to use every trick that I learned in music about connecting to people and about bringing excitement. And I said, we're going to use it all. And I told them, frankly, our main purpose here as a choir is not just to sing a special every service. I said, because that's fine, and people listen to it, and that may help them and inspire them. But we have this other section of the service where we are leading choruses, and it is a community activity, and we're all engaging, and I'm going to use every technique that I know in music to get everyone engaged. We're going to use modulations, we're going to use accelerandos and ritardandos, and we're going to use increases in volumes, and we're going to drop the volume. We're going to do all this stuff that causes people to go, oh, here we are. Because music has that power, and we're wired for it, and God gave it to us to do all these things. And we had fun. And I would tell them, this is a little more religious than I usually talk, but that's okay. I would tell them, when we're doing the worship service, if you want to worship, close your eyes and worship. You close your eyes and you worship. But if you've got your eyes open, you keep watching me, because I'm going to keep my spiritual antenna up. And if I feel like there's a potential of an opening in the spirit, that things are really starting to gel, and we as a congregation, as a unit, are starting to get focused, I said, what's going to happen is I'm going to turn around and I'm going to start walking towards you. And when you see me turn around and start walking towards you as a choir, that means get focused. Think about what you're singing. Respond to Him so that the people in the audience can see that you're opening up your hearts and you're worshiping. Because that, combined with the music, combined with the techniques we're going to use, are going to help usher people into the presence of God. And it was good. We had some good services. Power of music. Power of music. Because music is so pervasive in its effect on the brain that it just kind of makes you think that it was designed to be that way. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.